Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart, joining you from my house. Chris is also joining us from his house. Welcome to the show, Chris Spurvey.
Oh, thank you very much, Colin. We're on two opposite ends of the continent, I guess, right? I'm in Newfoundland, Canada. You're out in Vancouver, British Columbia. So you can't almost get as far from apart as possible, right?
Totally. Maybe if I moved to Victoria, Vancouver Island, a little Vancouver or Canada trivia there for you.
Yes.
You probably could. But you're on that weird, you're not 3 hours in front of us or 3 hours. Yeah, 3 hours in front. You're
4.5 hours.
Like, I think that's the only place in North America that's on that time zone. It was just for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very selfish. You wanted your own time zone.
Yeah. We're literally in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. I'm closer to Ireland than I am to Toronto. People don't realize how far out in the Atlantic Ocean Newfoundland, Canada is.
There's no way that's true. Like, I know my Canadian geography. I've drawn a map. There's no way you're closer to Ireland.
Yeah, look at it. Take a look. I suggest you do.
Oh, I guess that explains the accent a little bit then.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah, and you get me excited and get me really rolling, and it all comes out. My accent, I just start talking over myself, and oh yeah.
Right on. I get a couple of newbie buddies, and they are the best to drink with. The accent gets thicker and stronger, and then the storytelling comes out, and then it's like I can just wind up Campbell and just let him talk all night, and it's the best entertainment you could find.
Yeah. Here, I'll share a very quick one with you. Reminds me of going down to a resort down in the Dominican Republic years ago, and a guy from Quebec was in the pool with, and he kept telling these Newfie jokes to me because he knew I was from Newfoundland. All of a sudden, I looked at him and said, "What's black and blue and lays on the floor?" And he said, "What?" And I said, "It's going to be you if you keep telling them Newfie jokes."
A little violent streak in you, Chris.
Not a bit. It was just for fun.
Oh, right on. Well, this is the most Canadian opening to a podcast I think I've ever done. But welcome to the show, everybody. Today, we're going to talk about how to, like, basically sales for people in non-traditional sales roles. And so this is something that's been Chris's wheelhouse. We're going to talk a little bit about his history, but just I think there's two audiences here that are going to get a lot of value. It's people that are maybe new to sales and want a bit of a baseline of like, what are some tactics that Chris has used to sort of reframe things in his mind? And I think there's some really good questions for even those, or some really good questions. And there's one of my favorites in here. I'm not going to give it away. I'll let Chris bring it up. But there's one question that we've actually rolled out to our whole account management team already. And like, I had the pre-interview with Chris and I was super excited. So I think that's the first audience. The second audience that I think this is going to be relevant to, and you know, maybe the founder CEOs that are listening to the show, I'm hoping this is going to be a good one for you, because it's really like somebody transitioning into sales. What is the right mindset? What are the questions you need to ask? What are the things that you need to be doing? And Chris has a great background, and I'd love for you to maybe just share a little bit about, you know, you spent some time as the VP of Business Development for KPMG, but how did you get to be that individual, to get into that role?
Yeah, well, it's a great introduction, and I appreciate that. But you know, when you asked me, the first instance of sales for me where I actually had to do sales was during university. I ended up partnering up in 1993 with a fellow commerce student and a childhood friend of mine, and we started this internet. It was World Wide Web Design Company, and we started some of the first websites for companies here in Newfoundland. I had no real technical background, and my two partners, my friend Steve and my other friend Ron, were more technical. So they were the doers, and I was by default said, go out and try to find us some customers. So I dove into the Zig Ziglar books and different things like that. And I remember reading these things and saying, God, that doesn't feel like me. I'm not an extrovert. But I tried. I tried to do it in the mold that the book seemed to say, and I failed miserably. I fell down and picked myself back up so many times. I got road rash. I jokingly say I would drive up to the potential customer, and when I was turning in the driveway, the lights were on, But for some reason, when I went and knocked on the door, the lights were off. It was like they saw me coming, right? So I failed miserably. And that's really was my entry into sales. And it's been a theme really throughout my entire career, whereby I've embodied the sales role. So I had to try to figure it out, right? And it was when I made the realization that I can't sell like everybody, like other people say to sell. I had to find a way to mold it into my personality and feel good about it. That's when I started to take off and it really started to work for me.
Yeah. And you had a company that was acquired by KPMG. Can you tell me a little bit about that story? As I Google Newfoundland and Google Maps it to see how close to Ireland it actually is.
Yeah, 3.5 hour flight versus a 4 hour flight to Toronto. So that little internet design business, we ended up selling that, funny enough, not for a huge pocket of money or anything like that, but we had a myself and my partners decided, you know what, this has been a great venture, but we really need safe, secure jobs if we're going to get started in life. So we sold that business, which led me into working for an insurance company, an established insurance company. But I had that entrepreneurial spark. And I knew I needed to get out and express that entrepreneur inside me. So I ended up leaving that insurance company and basically being one of the original founders, leaders of an IT consulting company. And again, I took the role of sales. So that company, I was in charge of trying to get out there and find customers. And the original impetus of this company was a product called PeopleSoft. I'm not sure if you're familiar with PeopleSoft. It ended up being acquired by Oracle. It's a ERP solution. So the people who started the company outside of me, again going back similar to my original company, my fellow co-founders were PeopleSoft experts. And I wasn't an expert. I was just a sales guy, a guy who would get out there and find the customers. So we ended up growing that company. We started focusing on U.S. markets. Then we started focusing on the Ottawa market here with the federal government in Canada. And then we really hit a home run here in Newfoundland. So by the time 2013 rolled around, we had about 75 consultants. And we ended up having KPMG come along and decide to buy the company or ask us if we were interested in selling the company. So we sold the company in 2013, which led me then to KPMG. So where I then took the role of vice president of business development for KPMG. That was an interesting role because you think vice president of business development, does that mean you were out there finding all the work for the business? The answer to that question is no. What that role in that business was mentoring the consultants who on how to become good at sales and grow their own book of business. Because within these firms, to become partner, you need to have a book of business of certain X number of $X million. So a core theme within these firms is helping their consultants become better, quote unquote, rainmakers so that they can grow a book of business and then become partners. That's the people who stick with the firms are ones who can learn how to sell and then become partners.
Gotcha. And so when you landed at KPMG, they were basically saying, hey, we have all these people that want to be partners. They need to know how to make it rain. Yeah. Can you go do the rain dance, buy us rain sticks and teach them?
Teach them, yeah. Well, and there's really a lot of elements to the backstory, but while we were building Plato Consulting, I formed this vision. Here we were with a team of 50, 60, 70 consultants at various times. And I was the one burdening with, and I jokingly call consulting spinning plates. So if you have 70 consultants, you got to keep, and you're solely responsible for keeping these people busy. It's like spinning plates. You get 60 of them spinning, but by the time you get to the 60th, the first 10 or 15 are wobbly. So you got to go back, and it's a constant spinning plates. It's like a hamster wheel to some extent. So I started to do some research. How do consulting companies scale and how do they grow? And the more I learned, the more I realized, you know what? Sales is not something one person does within consulting. It's something that it should be spread across the consultants. The consultants should be building their reputations, building their goodwill, building their networks, finding ways to be more helpful and useful for their clients. And so that's when I started to implement within Plato Consulting, this, I guess, method of training these people to become better at building their networks and goodwill. So when KPMG came along and bought us, and they sort of started to talk to me about what would be the ideal role for me, because of that background of helping these consultants, they put me in this role to get to fly around the country helping the consultants do better at sales.
I'm imagining you as some sort of like circus trainer, and you're teaching all of these people how to spin plates. It's like, now you get your stick and you get your plate and you. I did miss this in the intro, but you're the founder of Revenue Room, or My Revenue Room. And so you have an online community where you're helping people and teaching them the sort of mindset behind how and why to spin plates.
You nailed it. Yeah. It's really a community very much geared towards what I would refer to as independent, solo practitioner consultants, because it's a pretty lonely world when you're independent out there. So it's a community that focuses and helps those types of people learn how to sell and grow a book of business.
Beautiful. Yeah. And so one of the things you mentioned when you were talking about teaching them to spin plates was the mindset. I'm wondering, because I imagine there's a lot of things, if you're making a transition from a non-selling role to a selling role, there's a lot of things you need to learn, but I suspect mindset is the first piece. Because if you're approaching everything with the belief that this doesn't work, I'm a cheesy used car salesman, I'm not adding any value to the process, it's not going to go well. Yeah. And so I think we're probably aligned that it starts with mindset. Talk to me about, talk to me about how you see mindset and how you see that impact the role.
Yeah, well, 100% it impacts the role. And because I think we all have a story, right? Every one of the people, almost virtually everybody, there are people who I talk to and they consider themselves born salespeople. And most of the people who admittedly call themselves born salespeople, they are truly extroverted people who love the handshaking and baby kissing and wining and dining and all that stuff. But the majority of us, that's not who we are, right? We're more closer on a scale of 1 to 10. We're somewhere in a 3 or 4. So a 1 being an introvert and a 10 being an extrovert, or say 3 or 4. And it's an ambivert is what that actually is. And Daniel Pink wrote about this in the book, To Sell as Human. But, you know, for me, a story comes up in my mind. Maybe I'll just say, I had a story as well. I remember it distinctly. 1983, I'm out playing street hockey with my friends on a Sunday. And I go inside. It was cold. It was in November. And we were sitting at the dinner table, and the doorbell rang, and it was the Electrolux vacuum cleaner salesman. And my mom and dad, he managed to wiggle his way into our living room pretty quickly. And mom and dad had not discussed any need for a vacuum, but within a 45-minute process, a very scripted, trained process, this Electrolux vacuum cleaner salesman managed to convince my mom and dad to spend almost $3,000 on a vacuum in 1983. And that's about 12 grand in today's dollars. And then my mom and dad fought about it for the next 4 or 5 months as they tried to figure out how to pay for it. So that was how sales was planted in my mind. So fast forward 10 years from then, and I'm charted with sales for this little company we started. That's why I failed, right? Because I thought it was something you had to do to people. I thought it was scripting. I thought it was objection fighting. And so kind of fast forward, I'm the chair in 2006. I'm the chair of the technology board here in Newfoundland. I was giving a talk on the growth of the sales community, or sorry, the technology community in Newfoundland. And I, for some reason, just out of a passion question, I asked this group of 30 entrepreneurs, what were some of the first words that come to mind when you think about sales? And I hit them at a point. I don't know the whole progression of my talk, but somehow I managed to get subconscious words, deep words. And they were sleazy, slimy, manipulative, objection fighting, and so on. And that's when I realized, my God, here are these entrepreneurs in the moment when it's time to sell, which is the title of my book, and this is what they think sales is, we have a major problem. right? Because how there's nothing congruent there. If you think sales is sleazy, slimy, but you need success in your business, success equates to revenue. How can you be successful if that's how you feel? So it all comes down to a mindset of an understanding of what sales really is, you know? So it is a mindset. It's 100% a mindset. So we need to reframe that sleazy, slimy, manipulative framing because we think in pictures. You know, if I say the word refrigerator, your mind immediately has a picture of the refrigerator on the screen of your mind. So if we think sales is sleazy, we're not going to be motivated to do it and do it effectively. So it is a mindset.
Mm-hmm. And thanks for that. Now I'm hungry. I'm picturing what's in my refrigerator. And
it's not even lunchtime yet for you.
Totally. And yeah. So how do we go about this process of reframing? Because I totally agree. If you're approaching this with, I'm trying to do this thing, and I've seen people do this. I've had people come to me and say, hey, I'm really struggling. And when you unpack it, they're like, I really don't want to be doing this, but I'm told that I should. I'm told that I need to be doing it. So I'm doing it, but I'm not happy about it. And I don't believe it. I don't believe that it's the right thing. It's like, well, then stop doing it. Right. Like if you're approaching it, like you're wasting your time because you're just going through the motions. And so to those people that are listening that, you know, might feel that way, how do we get them from, you know, I'm not happy about this. This is not the right thing to do, to, okay, I understand the impact that this is going to have and that this is actually a good thing. And it's a positive thing that I can use to sort of spread the joy and the benefits of our product.
Yeah. I mean, I think let's start with the premise and the premise is that people buy based on how they feel and then they justify that feeling logically. So if you as a quote unquote salesperson, whether you're true sales is in your title or not, you know, in other words, you're not necessarily a salesperson, you're a practitioner, a subject matter expert, a consultant, or CEO, right? And you're out there. When you meet somebody who is a prospect, they really do form an opinion very quickly on whether you are somebody they want to do business with or not. And it's at a subconscious level. So we do want to be very attractive, genuine, authentic individuals. So if that's the premise, then how do we get there? How do we get excited to go get out there and do it? And I guess for me, I came to the realization, I rounded the corner and started to notice I was motivated to get out there and sell when I formed, when I had a desire to grow the book of business. And also, you know, I made the decision to just get out there and do it, right? And the way I got there was by forming a vision for my life that had me being, you know, of service, delivering value. The real
not sure
problem
if this is me.
That I can solve.
I don't know if it was me or you that clipped out there, but yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you, but it did come up and say the internet connection is unstable.
Perfect. What was that last piece that you were just talking about there?
So what I was saying is that, you know, when we think about our prospects and the fact that when they go to bed at night, they're struggling to sleep because of the problems they have that they're trying to solve. And that if our product or our service can bridge the gap over that for them, then that's a huge power, right? So it's the vision that, you know what, we can really solve problems here. Let's get out there and talk and let's shout from the rooftop about it. So it's the vision that motivates you to act. You know, so that's where it starts, I think. From there, it's all
I love
about
that. Can I just build on that? Because I totally agree. And one of the tricks I used to do when I was trying to cold call, and this is not my idea, I picked it up from somebody else, is just before you pick up that phone, picture one of your best customers and picture the value and picture out the value you created them, the headaches that you saved them, and then just think, okay, I'm trying to connect with this human because they might be in a similar position as my customer, Chris, and they might be experiencing similar pain. I'm just going to give them a call to see if they're in a similar position, see if what we do might be a fit. And then that way I'm visualizing, I'm not trying to sell or convince or like trick somebody into giving me money. I'm not a scam artist. I'm just trying to see, hey, like we are really good at this sort of solving these problems. And I'm just going to call and see if you're experiencing any of those problems. And if there's an opportunity for me to jump in there.
You got it. Yeah. Yeah. Daniel Pink was right in his book. You know, why are ambiverts? So on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being introvert, 10 being extrovert. Why? I'm not sure if you've read the book, but on a scale of 1 to 10, the best, most productive salespeople rank 3.7 on that scale. And it's called ambivert. And the reason they are effective is because they are skilled attuners. Now, that's Daniel Pink's language. My word would be empathy. My word would be you actually feel the problem through that your client is experiencing, and you want to truly solve it for them. You know, mm-hmm. So I can't emphasize enough that one of the best things we can do is hone in on our own intuition and our ability to feel what our clients are feeling. It's one of the best things we can do as salespeople.
I love that you start with identify any issues you have sort of as a foundation, and then you build towards now, how do I develop empathy for the customer? And then how do I connect with them?
Yeah.
And like you alluded to, there are going to be some introverts, some extroverts, people are going to have different strengths. And so how do you identify what your different strengths might be?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's actually, I have now formalized somewhat of a methodology on it. It's not my methodology. It's a methodology called StrengthsFinder. And it's something now that all the clients I work with, is one of the first things we do is and what I love about StrengthsFinder is it frames up, it only focuses on strengths. You get your top 10 strengths, and the methodology says focus initially on your top five. So when I did my StrengthsFinder, what I found out was that I'm an amplifier. I'm deeply competitive. That's my second one. My third one is I have empathy, right? And the fourth one is I'm a maximizer. And the fifth one is I'm a futurist. And so when I read those strengths, I was like, wow, right? It was like I all of a sudden had an epiphany. God, I am a pretty cool person. I can bring immense value to the conversations, right? And, you know, now before I got introduced to StrengthsFinder, what I would do is have conversations, and typically with people who were trying to become more effective at sales. And one example that resonates with me and maybe would resonate with your audience is when I was working with KPMG, there was a guy I was mentoring. His name is Ed. And Ed wanted to become a senior manager over the next couple of years. He had to become better at selling. So I started to ask him some questions about his life. And I learned outside of his consulting at KPMG, he's a really passionate about Mustangs, the Ford Mustang car, to the point he actually operates a forum on the internet where Mustang owners, come and ask questions. And he actually answers a lot of the questions. Anyway, what I was able to find out very quickly about him is he's a very curious individual, and he's a problem solver. So what is sales? Sales is about asking questions and being curious about your prospect, and ultimately it's about solving people's problems. So when I reframe sales through his strengths, the cloak of negativity around sales just came off, and he started to get out there more powerfully. Going back to people make the decision to buy based on how they feel, he began acting very confidently and with strength and conviction, which the prospects perceived as value, right?
Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling like almost like a Maslow's hierarchy of needs type pyramid that's building up here, right? Mm. You're starting with any underlying issues that could be cracks in your foundation. Yes. Then you're sort of, and you're reframing with a positive attitude around problem solving. Yep. Then you're looking at building on your strengths and approaching from your strengths as opposed to your weaknesses and really understanding the lens that you see sales through. And then it feels like the top piece of the pyramid here is like, let's get a little bit tactical.
Yeah.
Right? Because those are kind of the base like mindset pieces, but then there's some specific tactics that are like learned skills. And so talk to me about what are those learned skills that we need to figure out in order to be effective?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, I think you know, so let's go back to the premise. We're talking about what would be non-sales sellers or people who are new to sales. So what's the raw material that we need to be successful? Well, the raw material are ears, mouths, in other words, prospects, right? And what's the means to get prospects? Well, maybe, you know, there's marketing means to get prospects. But what I have learned is that and realized myself is there's lots of opportunities to grow our businesses, grow what we do. And most of them pass us by because we don't have a framework to get to a point where we can figure out, can we truly help somebody? So if you'll permit me to dive into a little bit of a methodology around that, I call it the ladder, and there's really, you know, it's there's no real order necessarily to the ladder, but you know, and some people are doing certain pieces of the ladder really well, and some people are doing can be improved upon. But the first element of the ladder is the first rung of the at the base, and it's the messages that we're sending to the market when we're out there doing what we're doing, you know. And you know, that might be we're sitting next to somebody at a hockey game, and we're just having a conversation with them, you know. And so how do you break the ice and start to build rapport with somebody? You know, and so the first way I do that is I have an acronym in the back of my mind all the time: form, family, occupation, recreation, and motivation. And when you analyze a lot of rapport building types of conversations, it's really questions about family, questions about occupation, questions about recreation. Oh, you like to play tennis. Where do you play tennis to? Oh, you're a member at Greenbelt Tennis Complex. You know, I am as well. That's interesting. We have never seen each other. You know, and those types of questions just break the ice to get conversation flowing, you know. And so that's really the first rung is about messages that we're sending to the market. With the first rung breaking, the first piece breaking the ice to start to create conversation. So form is an acronym I've carried around and shared, and a lot of people hear it and they say, "Wow, it's good to have an acronym." It's because I get tongue tied when I first meet somebody and don't know where to go with it, right? So
you need that place to open a conversation.
Yeah,
and it's challenging, especially if you're in a networking event where you're like, oh, you know, what do we talk about? I'm staring at another human. How do I begin to interface with this other human in a way that isn't just, I would like to sell you some things?
Yeah, that's right. And what ends up happening, you know, a lot of people, when I talk about this form idea, they get the impression, oh, God, you're asking a lot of questions. But it never turns out that way. I've never had a forum conversation with somebody where it's been me only asking questions. It's what ends up happening is they ask me a question in return, right? Mm-hmm. So it becomes a true dialogue. And you know what? If the person doesn't bite and doesn't create conversation, you know what? They're not your ideal client. Just move on, right? So form is the first piece. The second piece, what I find is, you know, typically is that you get asked, what do you do? I find, so the goal here is to create energy. And we want to create, a positive energy. So if you're asked, what do you do? Oh, it says the internet's
yeah, good. I still got you. I can still hear you.
Okay. You're back. It says, so if you're asked, what do you do? Many people will reply to that, well, I'm the vice president of business development for KPMG, as though that means something, right? I would prefer to answer the question with some form of a benefit type of thing, right? So, you know, I help organizations improve their efficiency, save money on their bottom line. And that's more energetic reply. That leads to really another question. That's interesting. How do you do that, right? And what I'll say about that question is, when you're at a networking event, it's not really that big of an opportunity to go deep. You don't want to go deep because you want to get yourself into a situation where you can have a deeper conversation. So, what I would typically say to something like that is, you know what? Are you interested in going for coffee? Are you interested in having a phone call? Because if you say, you know, well, I do that through striking win-win relationships with clients, and I'm a fee-for-service consultant. You know, you've gotten yourself caught in what I refer to as the valley of death, because there's no real reason to get together anymore, you know, because you've shared everything with the person. So it's not likely to lead to that face-to-face or that that deeper conversation. So form, what do you do? That's interesting. How do you do that? And then that leads to, you know what, let's get together. Let's have a conversation. I'm always looking to grow my network. And you get together with that person where you can have then a deeper conversation, which is what I refer to as the diagnostic conversation, which is questions such as, tell me the history of your business. Tell me the history of your project. What is going really well? What's not going so well? What are the problems that you're facing? And really, that diagnostic conversation is an opportunity for you to get to know more, such that you can figure out if there's problems you can solve, right? And if there are problems that you can solve, it's quite simple. You say, listen, shoot me over the report that you're talking about. I'll have a quick look at it, give you an unbiased, objective recommendation, and then we can figure out if there's any next steps, right? So I may be boiling down or simplifying the sales process a little bit here, but almost every time it works, right? If you follow, and if you're listening to me saying that doesn't apply to my business, well, I recommend that you look a bit deeper because it does apply to your business.
And I think there's different structures and there's different ways of approaching things and different styles of answering questions. You know, like if you look at predictable revenue and how we sell, you know, that conversation is being had. It just might be split between somebody who's handling inbound or outbound and then the account exec, right? But still there's that arc of the conversation. And ultimately what we're driving for is, you know, the qualification criteria that, you know, whether it's BANT or MEDIC or NM, right? Do you have, like, the most important piece is, are you the right person to be talking to? And is there any pain in your life that we can maybe help you solve?
Yes.
Right? And if you're driving in that direction and you're being, you know, pleasant and persistent about it, and you actually do have something that aligns with it, and you do have the ability to solve that problem, then I think I think you're heading in the right direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so we've talked about like how to open conversations. We talked a little bit about diagnostic conversations. The next piece in helping consultants or non-salespeople sort of turn into more seasoned vets, I think we had a conversation about referrals. And so how do you go about teaching somebody, how to ask for a referral?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the ways is every time you hear the word thank you, it's a great opportunity to ask for a referral, right? And how, so let's just, You get to a point where you're actually engaged in working with this client. And what I'm always trying to do, and we'll come back to this million-dollar question that you sort of alluded to, but I'm always looking to deepen the relationship, find other additional problems that I can solve. And that ultimately leads to you being a true trusted advisor for that particular client. So what you're always having are conversations about what, you know, the project. You're checking in on the progress, and every time you hear the word "thank you" or "things are going well," I'm really happy with the progress. You simply say, "Who do you know who?" Right? Who do you know who has the same problem? Because I'm looking to expand my business, and if there was any introductions that you had, I'd so greatly appreciate it. You know, I find the who do you know who approach gets the person thinking and also just, gets your client realizing, you know what, Chris is operating a business and I'd love to help him, right? And I think one of the basic human needs is a desire to serve humans, fellow humans. So framing it up as, would you do me a favor, is a great way to do it, right? Because who doesn't want to help other people? And if you're in a good position with that individual, just ask, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the caveat there is, like, you got to be in a good position. How do you know if you're in a good position with the client?
Well, I always know where I stand with my client because at the end of every conversation with my client, I asked this million-dollar question, which is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you, are we? So I don't frame it only as you, as my client. I say, let's ask the question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are we with the progress that we're making? And that forces your client to say, you know what, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm a 7 or I'm an 8. And then I reply, you know what, I'm with you. I think that's a pretty decent rating. Now, let's just spend maybe a minute or two thinking about how we can improve it and get it closer to a 10. So this is how we always pivot. So we pivot around what's working and we try to work away from what's not working. And it creates this energy within your relationship with your client where you're always trying to just improve things. And what better environment than that, right?
I think this is such a powerful question, and especially if you're in a high touch industry like, you know, professional services, if you're ending every single engagement or every single conversation with your customer with, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you with the progress you're making? I think this is gold. This is the question that I picked up in our pre-interview, and I was like, I immediately turned around to our team and I went, hey, we need to be doing this.
Right.
Because it's, if you don't know where you stand, right, you can't... you're ignorant of either your success or your failure. And yes. I think either way, there's no excuse.
Yes.
And so now you have the opportunity to see and understand. And I think this is the most productive question you can ask, because if it's, hey, it's 10 out of 10, great. Would you mind doing me a favor and, you know, help me find some other customers? And if it's not great, it's like, great. Let's talk about how we can get up to that result.
That's right. Yeah, you got it. And it's just open, honest dialogue. And you what ends up happening is that you know you're getting deep with your client, which is where you want to be, when it's always authentic, honest, and upfront, right? And there's no guesswork then, you know? So I would encourage, and if you are, you do get the reply, you know what, not happy, I'm a 2 or 3. That's great. You now know. And imagine if you didn't know. You'd be fired, right? And it's your opportunity to fix it.
Well, because if you don't ask, you're eventually, and if you don't ask and you don't solve it, if you don't ask, you don't know, you can't solve it, you're going to get fired.
Yeah, you got it.
Simple math.
You got it.
Love that question. And so if we want to round this out as a good salesperson, the last thing they need to do is to be consistent. And so how do you teach people consistency?
Well, I mean, this is where the rubber meets the road. This is, your revenue depending on your sales cycle, in 3, 6, 9, 12 months from now is a pure indication of, it's a result of the effort you put in today, right? So consistency and discipline is the most important element in the equation. And really, what does that mean? Well, we need to be consistently adding new fuel to the fire, right? Earl Nightingale used to say, talk about the man sitting in front of the fireplace looking for heat, but he doesn't realize he has to put wood on the fire, right? revenue is the fire, prospects is the wood, right? So the heat from the fire is the revenue. The prospects is the wood. We need to pile it on. And, you know, it can be something as simple as time blocking. I'm not sure if you've ever read the book by Gary Keller, The One Thing, but it was where I learned. Now it's not rocket science, but it's about blocking in your calendar a certain amount of time every single day or week, depending on where sales is in your job. Time block it, because it's the first thing. Anything that has any degree of uncomfortableness, which for sales is that way for many people, if you don't time block it, it falls off the side of your desk.
Mm-hmm. I love the idea of time blocking. I was introduced to, I believe it was from the Now Habit, and I can't remember the author. I want to say Eckhart Tolle, but I might be mixing it up with a different book.
Are you sure that's not the Gary Keller's The One Thing? Because that's the one thing is the question, right? What can you do now?
I read the first bit of The One Thing because I had a bunch of people recommend it to me, and I thought, I feel like I've read this book before, and so maybe it was. But it was from the concept was the unschedule, and they said before you book before you book anything in your next week's calendar work-wise, book the most important personal things that you need to do. And so that way you feel personally taken care of by yourself. And it's sort of like the idea of paying off your debt and paying yourself first and saving. Yeah. Is you're taking care of yourself first and then you take care of everybody else and everything else second. And I love the idea. I implemented that myself. And then I build the regular calendar blocks around that. And I'm not afraid to go and run an errand in the middle of the day because I know I've got my priority work booked off. And I know that I'm flexible enough in my calendar that I can actually go and do that. And so that was, for me, that was a trick to actually sticking with the time blocks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I recommend you make it a recurring meeting in your calendar, right? A lot of my clients, independent consultants, Monday morning, 9 a.m. to 11 is prospecting time. And I say, you know what, in this upcoming week, not the week you're currently in, you know, because you're on Monday morning, you are setting up your schedule for the upcoming week. And if you know your math, if you need, say, 3 meetings a week to get 1 new client a week or whatever, you know, if you need those 3 meetings, make sure you book 5 because you're guaranteed 2 are going to get pushed out, right? Mm-hmm. So I like Monday or Tuesday for that day where you time block it because it's just the way the week kind of unfolds, right? It gives an opportunity. So let's just say it's Tuesday morning, right? So Tuesday morning, then you have Wednesday where people are replying to your invites and so on. Friday is a bit of a slower day on that. So it gives you then 2 or 3 good days to get everything sort of sorted out such that you hit the ground running in the upcoming week versus if you wait till Thursday, you got the weekend in the middle and it just leads to inefficiencies in communication.
I love it. And so it's about not just getting those blocks, but understanding the sort of cadence or the sequence that you should be following and then mapping it out across so that you've got all that math worked out ahead of time.
100%.
Love it. And so if I were to summarize, it's essentially, if we look back to the pyramid, it's making sure there are no underlying issues, no cracks in the foundation. Reframing it as problem solving, reframing the mindset as problem solving, focusing on leveraging your strengths as opposed to just trying to do this sales thing as, you know, copying your mentor or copying somebody else, is really finding what you're great at.
Yeah.
Understanding your message to market, understanding the diagnostic conversations, asking for referrals, understanding where you're at in each engagement so you know when to be asking for referrals, and then to build in that consistency of prospecting into your day-to-day calendar.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you'll allow me also just to touch on another, the last rung in the ladder, which is, I'm just coming back to the ladder. It's the network expansion, right? Always looking for ways to grow the quality of your network. You know, I was asked this morning about networking events. And one of the things I personally prescribe to locally here is I don't overexpose myself to, you know, all these different events that you can go to shake hands and exchange business cards. I'm a believer in having, I'm talking services. So a independent consultant or a professional, a consultant within a firm, they really only need, let's just say, 100 true fans, 100 true, and I'm not sure, there's a really good article out there that actually is about, in this internet world where thought leadership, it's about 1,000 true fans. And I forget the author now, Kevin Kelly, I'm going to say. Something to Google and put in the show notes. But this idea in this professional services world of 100 true fans. So what I do personally is I work in, so I have my very close inner circle of 100 true fans, people who are my clients, and I treat them like gold. Now I do expand a little bit out of that, obviously, by, you know, every 2 weeks I hold a networking lunch at a local restaurant, and I look over my list and I say, you know what, I haven't talked to Jake in a while, and I invite Jake to lunch, and I invite then Jake to invite 1 or 2 of his friends or people to the lunch, right? So we end up having a lunch of 8 or 9 people, right? And it lasts maybe roughly 2 hours, and we go around and we introduce each other, we talk about what's working and what's not in each other's business, and it's a great way. And then you bridge from that into a one-on-one over a boardroom table or over a coffee at a coffee shop. And that's how you go deeper. So that's how I expand my network. And I think, in, you know, if I really reflect on that over the last, say, 7 or 8 years in this market, and I should note, that's how I expand in all my travels. Like, if I got to go to Toronto to work with a client, I will do a networking lunch in Toronto instead of going and going to networking events where it's hard to meet people and get deep. I'll do a lunch and I'll invite. I'll go on LinkedIn, find 2 or 3 people I'd like to meet and talk to, or I'd like to talk to and rekindle the relationship in Toronto, and then I'll invite them to invite a couple of people. So that's how you expand your network and kind of get intimate and deep in that human-to-human type of environment.
Love it, Chris. I really appreciate you putting a nice little cap on it like that, because I do agree with you. Network expansion is something we always need to be thinking about, and especially in the professional services business, is something that should always be top of mind. Really appreciate you coming on the show. I want to wrap with my favorite segment, Cold Call Me. And so... talk to me about, so we're going to do this cold call role play. Talk to me about who I am as your buyer, what persona, what kind of company am I working for?
Yeah. I mean, let's say, I guess you're a, let's just say you are the owner of a professional services organization, a boutique professional services or consulting organization. And, you know, I would just call, I would pick up the phone. I'd give you a call and I'd say, Colin, this is Chris Spurvey with My Revenue Room. Reason for my call today is to inform you of our virtual training platform. Now, I want to just pause. We are in a time, and I'm not sure when this is going to go live, where great uncertainty is happening in the market we're in, right? We're in the middle of COVID-19. So that's got a couple of different tentacles to it, but one of the tentacles is, it's a great, go to back to my form, right? It's a great opportunity to show compassion. And I believe in this environment, without leveraging compassion, you come across as being completely oblivious and you lose immense credibility. So go back to my approach. It would be, before I get into that, I do want to say that I hope your family and your colleagues are doing well, right? And then I would just say, wondering if you can, if we can find 15 minutes to talk about how your company currently approaches sales. And then I would let that person talk.
Yeah. Love it.
So there's a couple of elements to it. Well, the compassion element. And the last element is, I relieve any stress on that particular call by saying, I wonder when you would have 15 minutes versus trying to achieve the 15 minutes and do it in that particular call. Right. So that's how I personally approach it. And by relieving the stress of, oh my God, this is some cold caller sales guy calling me. We focus on the future, which is, when can we find 15 minutes when I can talk to you about your sales approaches?
Love it. Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show. If people want to get in touch, what's the best way for them to track you down?
Go to chrisspurvey.com. And in terms of social media, LinkedIn is where I'm quite active. So just do a Google and find me on LinkedIn, and I'll accept your invite, and let's get to know each other.
Perfect. I've got your LinkedIn right here. Chris, it's basically, you've got the /in/ Chris Spurvey, no funny numbers or anything. You've got chrisspurvey.com, and then you've got the book.
MyRevenueRoom.com as well.
My Revenue Room, and then the book, It's Time to Sell.
You got it.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Chris.
Yeah, thank you, Colin. It's been a pleasure.
Right on. And we'll see you all next week. Cheers.